Okay. This is a class in law. What is the law? It's rules. And it's rules by which civilization is ordered. It's as simple as that. If you play Monopoly, there's a rule book. Nobody ever reads it, but it's there. And you have to have rules in order to engage in a game. Any game's that way, life's that way. And the law is the way that our civilization orders itself. In our government, the way we've structured it in the United States, our government operates for one simple thing. It protects your rights. Our government is founded on two basic documents. We're the first government in history that's founded on written documents. No other government before it was. Even Britain, from which we come, is not founded on written documents. It's founded on customs, on discussions, collections, and things. The United States was formed first on the Declaration of Independence. Beautiful document. Read it. It's not that long. It's gorgeous. And that declaration tells you how the law is created in this country. It's the foundational document. And what does it say? It says that we as people, and that's important because all other governments before the United States and most of them afterwards did not recognize individual rights. Does that mean the United States was the only country with rights? But in most other countries and most other cultures, your right was a collective with other people. It wasn't just all about you. In our country, it's all about you. And the Declaration says that every individual has inalienable rights. The Declaration declares them as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was plagiarized. A guy by the name of John Locke, who will discuss this in another lecture more in depth, wrote that 80 years before. He said, life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. The guy who wrote the Declaration was a guy by the name of Thomas Jefferson. You may have heard of him. He's on a $2 bill. Everybody have $2 bill? Thomas Jefferson's on a $2. He's also on a nickel. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration. Wrote it with John Adams, so a lot of people don't know that. John Adams was in the room. And Ben Franklin, you know? But he was asked 50 years after the Declaration, what the heck did you mean by pursuit of happiness? It's different than what Locke said. Locke said pursuit of property. Why didn't you change it? It means something different. What do you think he said? I think he's right. Government is created to protect individual rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. That came right from the source. The guy who wrote The Pursuit of Happiness, he said same thing in his letter to Philadelphia, 1826. 50th anniversary. And guess what? He couldn't go to the ceremony. You know why? Really sick. He's an old guy. You know what he did that day? instead of going to the ceremony?
Watch that YouTube.
You got it. Two of the founders who wrote the Declaration died the same day. Adams and Jefferson both died July 4th, 1826. 50 years to the day of the signing of the Declaration. Okay. Our laws, as we said, were based on the laws of England, but we expanded those laws. We drove them for the rights of individuals. English law protected rights. You see a lot of the founders talk about the rights of Englishmen. But you know what England didn't do? It didn't protect the rights of individuals. England, who is sovereign in England?
King George.
The king in Parliament. It's all one entity. The government is the sovereign. Who's the sovereign in the United States?
No one.
Not true. What's the first three words of the Constitution of the United States? We the people. Why is that? Because the people are the sovereign in the United States. You all are. That's why the first three words of the Constitution are we the people, because you're giving the sovereignty to the government that's vested in you. You're lending it to them. Okay? Not true in England. We are the first, and even today, pretty much the only country where the people are the sovereign. Okay. We live in a federal system. We have the national government, we have the state government. They exist together, cooperatively. Each of them are based upon a constitution. We're the first government, as we said, that created that structure with a written constitution. The United States Constitution was written in 1787. The New York State Constitution was written 10 years before. 9 years from now, it'll be 250 years old. It was one of the first and most elegantly written constitutions in history. And the federal constitution borrowed heavily from New York State. The concept of due process of law, one of the things we hold most dear as Americans, came right out of New York. New York State were the people. John Jay, you may have heard of him, there's a college named after him. He was the first Chief Justice of the United States and the principal author of the New York State Constitution. He came up with that concept of due process of law. He was the guy who did it. But if you look at all these constitutions, the constitutions of the 50 states, the constitution of the federal government, they're all almost identical. Why do you think that is? Was it just groupthink? No. There's a reason for it.
His name is John Adams.
Right before the Revolution kicked into high gear with the Declaration of Independence, all the states sent representatives to Philadelphia in what was called the Continental Congress. And they went to the world's famous, in the United States, the most famous legislature. You know what John Adams was technically famous for? He was the lawyer who defended the British soldiers in the Boston Massacre. He hated doing it. He was a huge patriot. He couldn't stand the British. But he defended it. You know what? He believed everybody should have a fair trial. And who better could be a lawyer for a group of people that everybody in town wanted dead than a leading patron in the country? John Adams, brilliant man, gifted lawyer. He was asked by Congress, the Continental Congress, to come up with a plan because if you're going to separate from Great Britain, remember there's no national government, just a collection of colonies. The colonies were set up by the king. We couldn't let the colonial governments be on their own. Who appointed the governor of the colonies? The executive of the colonies, who was appointed by? The king. He appointed them. So you're going to tell the king to go flip off. And by the way, the guy who you appoint, you can keep him in. Not a good idea. So they asked John Adams, John, come up with a system, write a letter to all of the colonies, and tell them how they need to form their own government. Now, to hear you, that sounds like not that big a deal. We have all these state governments and so forth, right? Back then, nobody had ever done it. Nobody argued, they didn't know whether they had an executive, which was a group of people. Some governments were structured like that. Whether or not they have a legislature, which was only one unified branch, that's the way Parliament is. It has a House of Lords, but they're not like a Senate. He said, we're going to do a bicameral legislature in every state, wrote to every state, you're going to have an elected governor. The people are going to elect one. You're going to have a legislative branch, which is going to have two houses. The founders were desperately afraid of power. They saw how both Parliament, you know, everybody today thinks it's just King George. Parliament was far more dangerous than the king, and they knew it. They were afraid of the legislature, not just the executive. So he said, I want to split the legislative branch in two. What do you think they did there? Because it divided the power. They had to work together, checks and balances. So not only did the executive have a check on the legislative, but the legislative had a check on each other. And lastly, the most brilliant part of all of America, on the lawyer, so I'm biased, the independent judiciary. In England, the judiciary was a part of the king. The king picked all the judges, he told them what to do, he could remove them at his pleasure. So if a judge came up with an opinion that he didn't like, you were gone. There was no independence on the judiciary. Adams said that's wrong. I respect the judiciary. I want it to be something that is respected by society. We're going to have the executive appoint them, but the legislature confirm them. And once they get confirmed, they stay there until they do something really naughty and get impeached. By the way, it's not you, executive, who get to remove them. It's the legislature. How many judges have been impeached in the history of the United States? Less than 20 in the entire history. Okay? Not a lot. Adams writes to all the states, then colonies, and guess what? They all set up their government pursuant to his letter this way. His thoughts on government, that's what this letter's called, forms the framework of all state governments. To name the 50 states, how many have a unicameral legislature? That means a one-house legislature rather than two. How many? Everybody guess? There's one state. One state that doesn't. Nebraska. wants to be a senator of Nebraska. They're the only state that didn't follow the Adams Framework. And that was 100 years afterwards. Okay? Nebraska comes in the 1850s.
When the federal government goes to form, by the way, Adams was not at the Constitutional Convention. He was a diplomat over in Europe.
He was actually the ambassador to England. Boy, how tough a job was that? By the way, Ken, we just threw you out, but I'm here to court your favor. Kind of a tough job. But they gave it to who was the self-proclaimed most obnoxious man in America. That's what Adams used to call it. Adams was an in-your-face type of guy. When he was vice president, he's vice president George Washington. What does the vice president do? He's got one job. He resides over the Senate. He shows up in the Senate first time. This is the brand new vice president, number one. Washington's vice president. Washington's first president. The Senate, who doesn't really love Mr. Adams because he is the most obnoxious man in America, passes a resolution on what to call. No one would touch Washington. They thought he was God. So when they asked Washington what he called you, His Majesty, His Excellency, he said, no, just call me Mr. President. People need to know how to general Washington is. Actually, Mr. President. But what would you call a vice president? Vice president? That sounds good today, that's what you call. Well, because the Senate found him rather obnoxious and because he was there presiding every day over the Senate, and he thought he could debate, but he couldn't, they passed a resolution. Instead of calling him Mr. Vice President, they called him his fat-ass wonder. History isn't always clean and nice. They did eventually repeal it when he became president.
He was a brilliant guy.
What is our structure of laws in this country? At the top of the Constitution, and whether or not it's the state or the federal government, the top supreme law is the Constitution.
The supreme law of the land is the United States Constitution.
The United States Constitution is the ultimate law. You cannot violate that. A statute, even a federal statute, can't violate the Constitution. That's why we have the Supreme Court. They declare what? Unconstitutional. It's not compliant with the federal constitution. It is the supreme law of the land, and if you read it, it will tell you that. The United States Constitution says it's the supreme law of the land. The same thing for a state constitution in a state. That's the supreme law of the state. Now, the state constitution can't violate the federal constitution. Federal one's always supreme, but the state one is supreme within the state so long as it doesn't burn the federal. Statutes are what are enacted by legislative bodies. It's the second level of law. Congress enacts it on the federal level. The state legislatures enact it on the state level.
Then you have case law. Case law really doesn't have a priority. Why?
Case law isn't its own set of laws. It amplifies other laws. It either provides for constitutional principles, such as the protecting of your rights, or it interprets statutes. So case law, even when there's cases in controversy done by custom under stare decisis,
is not a rank within that. If you have to rank it, it really comes third. Then you have regulations. Regulations is certainly down below the other ones. That's what a state agency interprets through a promulgative process where they write something up, regulations of that agency. So the Department of Environmental Conservation will tell what this environmental law passed by the state of New York actually means and what gets implemented. It cannot violate a constitution. It cannot violate a statute. And lastly, underneath, you have executive orders. Executive orders are the bottom feeders of law. That is when the executive, albeit either the president or the governor, tells his employees what to do. That can't violate a regulation, can't violate case law, can't violate statutes, and it certainly can't violate the Constitution. Okay? As we said, law is rules, rules by which civilization is ordered. Where does that rule book come from? It comes from our Constitution. Our Constitution sets up, as we said, a federal representative republic. We have a Republican, that's with a small r, form of government. A Republican form of government means we are not a democracy. A democracy is where people vote directly on what they want to do as a law. We do not have that in this country. We elect representatives who in turn make the laws. We don't like the laws they make, we throw the representatives out and tell them to make new laws. But we elect people, we have a republic. As Franklin said when he left the Constitutional Convention, we have a republic if you can keep it. And what that means is important because the Constitution specifically says every state has to have a Republican form of government. That means when you say Republican, substitute representative. It cannot be, we couldn't turn around and say, the state of Vermont's now going to do everything by referendum. Okay? We can't operate that way under our federal constitution. You have to set up a Republican representative form of government. Okay? The federal government, you got the president, you have the Congress, and you have the federal courts. The three separate branches. We'll find out in later lectures, this comes right from Rome. It's an important concept. It works because power is, divided. New York State, you have the governor, the state legislature, and the state courts. The Congress is a bicameral body, as we said, United States Senate and the House of Representatives. At the time of our founding, the United States Senate was a much different animal. The United States Senate was formed to be a representative body of the states at the time of the founding. Senators were not elected under the original Constitution. It wasn't until the early 1910s that we changed that in the Constitution. I think it was 1913. Before that, the state legislature would elect the Senate. But today, they're directly elected, and in all the states, they're directly elected. Interestingly enough, New York State tried to follow the federal model where the assembly was representative of the counties. But guess what? That was struck down by federal courts, saying you have to have one man, one vote. So you have a bicameral legislature, a Senate, and the assembly in New York, both of which are directly elected. By the way, they both in New York State have two-year terms. 1938, they increased the term of an assemblyman from 1 year to 2. They increased the governor's term from 2 years to four, and they were going to increase the term of the Senate from 2 years to four, but the public will have to approve these things by means of an election voted down. Okay? So that's why the full state legislature runs every 2 years. The United States government, you have the Senate run every 6 years, House of Representatives run every two. Okay? The federal courts, Supreme Court, highest court, Court of Appeals, mid-level court, U.S. District Court, which is here in Albany, is the third level court. The state system, it's flipped. The Supreme Court is the lowest level court in New York State. Highest in the United States, lowest level in New York State. It's the trial court in New York State. So if you go to the Supreme Court in New York State, you're just starting out. You go to the Supreme Court in the United States, it's the end of the road because it's the highest court. Our highest court, which is right in downtown Albany, across the street from the Capitol, is the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals, highest court in New York. Appellate division is in between. Okay? All right. In order to stay, why do we go through this issue on laws, of course, of property, not choices, civics, very easy. But if you want to understand property, property isn't that computer, your iPad, your car. It's rights. It's your right to control and have dominion and control power over that object. If it was just the object itself, we'd never have intellectual property. Can you hold the idea of an invention in your hand? No, it's a thought, an idea. Can you take your house with you when you travel? I don't think so. Okay? It's your right to control it. So if you really want to understand property, I want you. You want to understand property, you've got to understand rights. Because it's all about rights. It's not the object itself. You can own something, but if I have the right to use it, does your right to own it mean anything? It's my right to use it. Who's owning the object itself? Could you ever rent an apartment? Because you are possessed. No, it's all about rights. We need to know what a right is. That's next time's class. Our founders love property. Because our founders love freedom. And they knew you couldn't have one without another. If you didn't have property, you didn't feel free. And they talked obsessively on rights. But when they did, it was always married to property. James Madison wrote our Constitution. Cute little guy, 110 pounds, 5'1". His house is amazing if you ever get there. It's in Virginia. It's called Mount Pelee. Just opened up because the DuPonts owned it. Huff Park family lived there until 2010. Just became a national landmark. Go there and visit. James Madison wrote the Constitution really out of that house. But this is what he said on property. This is the guy that wrote the Constitution. Pretty good authority. Government is instituted to protect property. Adams. Brilliant guy. Helps write the Declaration. Sets up those thoughts on government that every state creates. Property must be secured or liberty cannot exist. Pretty good authority. Thomas Jefferson, again that guy in the nickel. Persons and property make the sum of objects of government. Again, when he was asked,
the day that he ended up dying, he sent that letter.
What does life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness mean? The pursuit of property. The guy who wrote it said it. John Jay, remember the guy who writes the state constitution? Innocent use of property is the cornerstone of every free constitution. George Washington, pretty good source, number one president. The secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of person and property is what liberty itself is. Alexander Hamilton, you may have heard about his musical. Do you know that Alexander Hamilton married Philip Schuyler's daughter? You know Philip Schuyler? The guy who really won the revolution, and he's from Albany. If you ever venture down to the state capitol, there's a big statue of him right in front of City Hall. Hamilton married his daughter. Schuyler was amazing. But hey, this is Hamilton. First Treasury Secretary. The end and intention of government is to preserve life, property, and liberty. George Mason, the guy who advanced the plan that Mason made at the Constitutional Convention. The enjoyment of life and liberty with means of acquiring and possessing property. That's what our inherent rights are. William Patterson, first Attorney General and Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Unalienable rights may only be reckoned with the right of acquiring and possessing and protecting property. James Wilson, again a Justice of the Supreme Court. These guys were huge people. The right of property is the principal object of a government. Sam Adams makes good beer, I understand. I don't drink, but I understand it does. Okay. Our inalienable rights include first, a right to life, secondly, to liberty, third, to property. John Dickinson, you can see one after another after another, they all say the same thing. You can't separate liberty and property. They're part of the catalyst of freedom. This is not a concept of materialism. It's the pursuit of property that leads to freedom. It's not the item itself. It's your ability to pursue it and go in the direction you want to. If it was just the item, the government could say, I can tell you what the hell you want to do, here's the item, and only I can tell you what to do with it. That's not freedom. What freedom is your ability to pursue it and exercise itself. It's not about equality of means, it's about equality of opportunity. That's what freedom is. That's what property means. It's about rights. You know, I know lately everything's cyclical in life. It really is. Some days the football team is up. Sometimes it's down. I happen to be a fan of the Washington Redskins.
Why?
Well, my daughter says the same thing. She's a Giants fan. She says, the Redskins have not had a rebuilding year, they've had a rebuilding generation. My daughter was in utero with my wife the last time they were in the Super Bowl. She is now a lawyer practicing in New York City. So it's been a rather long process. Things change, they come back. It's now very popular sometimes to bash the founders. What were the founders first and foremost? You know?
Soldiers?
People. Are people perfect? I haven't met one of them. There are no perfect people. If you expect perfection from any person, I just have to say you're probably going to be disappointed. Some of the founders were wonderful men and women. And there were women too. Some of them, not so much. Thomas Jefferson wrote the most beautiful words in the history of humanity. The Declaration is the most personally empowering document ever in history. It says that every person matters. Every one of us. That government said before was heretical. But Jefferson did not embody that one. Matter of fact, please excuse my profanity, but he's pretty much a son of a gun. He would undercut anybody who ever helped. Washington tried to help Jefferson his whole life. Both came from Virginia. Washington was quite a bit older than Jefferson. Jefferson undercut him every step of the way. He was Secretary of State, which was the highest staff position you could appoint to somebody. Jefferson embarrassed Washington. So he wasn't a great guy. But he wrote the most beautiful words ever. Why are we a free people? Because of those words we wrote. It's because everybody can embrace those words. You don't have to embrace the guy. Washington, on the other hand, was one of the greatest men you've ever thought of. The only Southerner who freed all the slaves. He's the only founder from the South who freed all the slaves. And it wasn't politically popular. He used to do it quiet. There was a statute that said if you brought someone into Pennsylvania, which was a free state, you brought a slave. If you left them behind for 30 days, they were free. You know what you do every time you visit Philadelphia? You bring a bunch of it. First of all, he didn't own a lot of slaves, right? But they were part of it. He'd bring them with him. Nobody could attack him in the South. We just say, Jesus, back. He freed every one of his slaves. And he had hundreds of them. White. They freed him. So when you turn around and say that they didn't know the difference, they did.
They weren't all perfect people. But they had perfect aspirations in what they wrote. The fact that we support individual liberties today is the most human empowering thing anybody can do. The fact that our system of government said that every person is equal in the eyes of God. You don't have to believe in God to see the beauty of this.
Why? Because if you're equal in the eyes of God, that means no government can mistreat you. The founders all knew that.
We didn't realize all of this for years. We had to fight a civil war. There were challenges we had. But it all started on this foundation. And property rights was the pillar they built it on. It's one of those three fundamental rights: life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. And it's directly and completely a pillar of individual rights. Okay,
last one. Remember, we have a federal system. You have federal laws and the state laws. The common law, which is the law which we have a legacy from England, is embodied in state law. Natural law, which is the law of the Declaration, is all state law.
law is all state law. There's one exception. Intellectual property law is all federal law.
Because the United States Constitution delegates that power to the federal government. All the rest of it, state law. Okay, take a 5-minute break, come back, we'll do our case, and we'll be out. Okay? Five minutes, guys.
Who wants a Skittles?
Hey, Mark. Anybody else? Okay.
You sure got a fine amount of sense to get this capital building here in Washington. But I wonder who that San Luis Captain Baker is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long week while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Enough of schoolhouse. Oh boy. Okay.
Just to bring forward, there are extra credit points for sitting up front.
How close are you?
First 3 rows.
Anyway.
Ivana, come forward. The lovely Ivana wants to serve her community. She believes she has the ability to work hard. She's scrupulously honest, and she wants to run for Congress. She wants to go to Washington. This is Josh. Josh also believes that he can make a real difference. He has lots of great ideas. He's incredibly hardworking. He volunteers for everything you can imagine. Josh also wants to run for Congress. Now, running for Congress, it's a federal office. You need to run every 2 years. You're a representative district of about 750,000 people. In order to run for Congress, like many other offices, you have to circulate petitions within the party you wish to run in. And that's how your name will appear on a ballot. You have to get a certain number of threshold signatures in order to appear on that ballot, so people could vote for you if they wish to. The number of signatures depends on the office. A state legislator needs 1,000. Congress is what? 2,500. Now, that seems like, I don't know, but it's a lot of work to get 2,500 signatures. And you can only get them in the party in which you're running. Josh and Ivana are in two different parties. If they qualify for the ballot by circulating those petitions, and if anybody within your party also qualifies, you'll have what is called a primary. We had a debate in the gubernatorial primary last night. The governor and his opponent debated at Hofstra University. Last evening, they're both running to represent the same party. Josh and Ivana are two different parties. They're the lead candidates in their party. Nobody wants to, within their party, run against them. But they're willing to run for that office, representing their party. Now, I might ask them just to ask for a 10-second statement and say why you want to do this. Ivana, you go first. Why do you want to be a congressman? Okay, Josh, you go.
Because I think the school needs change.
Okay. Time for a change. I think I've heard it. Hold on.
I think that I can make a difference in our school's community.
Ivana wants to make a difference. positive difference from the school. Josh thinks it's time for a change, and then he say change agent. Okay. Please turn around and face the light. All of you who wish to have time for a change, vote for Josh, raise your hand. Okay. All of you who think it's better for a new community to service that, want to vote for Myra, raise your hand. Okay, Ivana, you've been elected to Congress. Go sit down and take your seat. Josh, you stay here. Okay. You can go sit down. Okay. Now, Josh is a hardworking, honorable guy. He got a ton of support. And because of that high threshold that Josh got, that's not nice. Because Josh ran, and he ran as a gentleman, you notice he didn't slam Ivana, he was very polite, just talked about why he did it. And by the way, I was an elected official for 20 years. I was the chairman of the Schenectady County Legislature for a long time. And believe me, I never mentioned my own skin. So what he did was exactly what he did. You're in Congress. You thought he was a gentleman. You didn't want to win, you wanted to win yourself, but you thought he was a nice guy. So you decide maybe Congress wasn't right for you. Maybe the state assembly is where you want to be, or the state senate. Which one do you want to run?
Senate.
Thanks, Mike. Screwed up. Okay. Josh decides he's going to run for state senate. Whereas Congress is represents a district of $750,000, Senate represents a district of $300,000. My dad was a state senator for 40 years. Longest serving state senator in the Congress retired in the state's history, but he's only actually one of the Josh runs a wonderful campaign against petition signatures. He follows this campaign strategy.
There's a lot to do in a campaign. You can see there.
Why do you want to be a state senator, Josh? What's your big issue? What do you want to change?
Introduce that bill. Where will that bill go?
transportation bill? Is it an education? It could be yours, depending on how you write it. How does a bill get referred to a committee? It's based on the first set of the law it amends. You're going to amend the education law. You know why? That's what SUNY is in. So as a result of that, you're going to amend the education law. Guess what? It's going to go to education. What's your name? Taylor, you were the chairman of education for the New York State Senate. You like this idea? Say you do, because then I'm going to try to hear fast. You do. So you talk to the members of your committee, which is usually about 14 senators on a committee. There's 63 senators in the state. You have to get 32 to pass a bill. We have half plus one. You need how many out of 14 to get it to go out of the committee? What's half of 14? Seven, so you need eight, right? It's got to be a majority. So you talk to eight of your friends on the committee, and you're a very powerful chairman. Why? Because you say you hope that it's still out of committee, so you're going to turn around and give them their bill, because you're a powerful chairman. Okay. What's the vote of your committee? 14 zip. You're quite a chairman. Now, once the bill gets out of committee, this is going to have a cost to it, will it not? But your building is on a parking lot, right? That might be a parking garage, or it might be more parking lots, that would be more signage. Sadly, it's the state university, that's going to cost you more. Okay. Now. How we are is the chair of the Senate Finance. Next to the majority leader, you are the grand poobah. You know why? You control all the money. Okay? What do they say? Show me the money. Show me the money, baby. You like this bill? Say you do. He does! Now, everybody wants to be on Senate Finance. Why? Because that's where the money is. Right? There's 26 members on Senate Finance. I think you need 14. How many do you get? Now, you're a hell of a chairman. You get 18 because you're a hell of a chairman. Okay? There's some stocky old guys who didn't want to get the big part. Okay? But you pass it comfortably. Now, in order for a bill to pass and become law, it's also got to pass the assembly. Remember that bicameral legislature? You are a young assemblyman. You like this idea. You do. You want to move the assembly. What's your name? Hey, you are chairman of education in the state assembly. What do you think? He likes it too. The assembly's bigger. It's got 150 members. It's kind of like a zoo. I start to burn. I like it. It is. The Senate's rather small. The assembly, it's kind of like a fruit. It's kind of like the cafeteria on food. You're in education. I think you got 18 people on your committee, okay, as opposed to 14 in the Senate. What are you passing? 14. Pretty heavy duty. There you go. Okay. Then it goes to Ways and Means. Ways and Means Chair. Lily, Chairman of Ways and Means. Okay. You also have a grand poobah committee. You like it? You want the tax for it? Okay? Where do you come from? Mahoney County, Mahoney County, Holman State University, right? And a lot of students in the district, so you've got a lot of research. Now, you have another assemblyman who live in the city of New York. They don't want to send SUNY. Okay? They have their own city university system called UNY. They say to you, only vote for this bill if you do the same thing for you. I want an amendment to the government. Well, it's not going to make a difference. Because the assembly is dominated by the city of New York. The Senate is not the assembly. Now, there's been an amendment proposed in the assembly to include CUNY. Are you good with that?
Yes.
Because the sponsor of the bill controls the old bill. Okay? Are you good with that? Or what if it's your bill, Lisa? He's good with that too. Okay? So now the bill's been amended. You get it out of committee, goes to the floor. Okay? Okay. Gabrielle. The Senate Majority Leader, she's the big hoo-ha. You run that Senate with an iron? No. President Senate Majority Leader, who happens to be my boss, is one of the loveliest men in the history of the universe. His name is John Glenn, who's the lawyer. Gabrielle, are you okay with this new amendment bill? Yeah. You're going to tell your problems in a moment. Now, on this side of the aisle, not politically, is the Senate. All those in favor of this bill, so now on the Senate floor, raise your hand. Remember, if you raise your hand, you probably get out of here soon. It passes wildly. You can pass it. Now, pass the Senate. It travels by messenger. The speaker himself. Here's the gift. If you wish to put it on the floor, you're a powerful chairman of the Ways and Means, so to speak. Okay, the speaker says, the speaker controls everything. The speaker says, Mr. Hastings, you want to call for a vote? Okay, all those in favor say aye. Raise your hand. Okay, passes wildly again. It's passed both houses. Now, where's Gabriel? The first house to pass it gets to send it to the governor. You know. Adam, you are the governor of the state of New York. How do you feel on this one? You're good with it. Gabby? You go by Gabby? Gabby, you're good. Where should you come from? Gal? Gal, you get to send your bill, pick up your paper, walk it over to the governor. Quick, let the money. She's delivering the bill. Now, the Senate is in session as is the assembly. Under our state constitution, you have 10 days, exclusive of Sundays, Sundays don't count, to sign the bill or to veto it. Adam, what are you going to do?
He signs
the bill, becomes law. See you next week.